The Local Thread.
Hello, and welcome to TPS Proud Out Loud. I'm Patty Mazur, Executive Director of Communications with Toledo Public Schools.
And I'm Rob Worsinski, TPS Communications Coordinator. Thanks for joining us.
Over the next hour, we're going to be discussing the nationwide teacher shortage and efforts by TPS to spark student interest in becoming future teachers.
With us in studio this week will be Dr. Treva Jeffries-Martin, Assistant Superintendent of Human Resources at TPS, Dr. Amira Archer, who's a senior administrator and former teacher with TPS, as well as Dr. Tom Brady, a longtime advocate for education here in the Glass City. We welcome to the show Dr. Treva Jeffries-Martin. She is Assistant Superintendent of Human Resources at TPS. We say hello.
Hello.
Yeah. Let's talk about, right, first off, your memory of your favorite teacher of all time.
Oh, gosh. Just, I have two.
Okay.
So I'll talk about elementary. Yeah. That was Sister St. Martin at St. Angela Hall. And she was very kind. And she adjusted to us as students as needed. And she reminded me of the Nun and Madeline, the Madeline books. Mm-hmm. And then in middle school or junior high school at Robinson Junior High, I had Mr. Bates, Leroy Bates, for my reading and spelling teacher. He was awesome.
Yeah. We also say hello to Dr. Amira Archer. She's a senior administrator with teaching background at TPS. We say hello to you.
Hello. Hello. Thank you for having me.
And let favorite teacher that comes right into the mind right off the top.
Mr. Kinsey. Mr. Kinsey was my science teacher when I was at McTagg. I want to say 7th and 8th grade, but he may have been, besides my own parents as teachers, he may have been the first one to really spark my interest into the world of science.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. Everybody has that one teacher or two that comes to mind. Mine is a sixth grade teacher who always had time to talk before, during, after school, mm-hmm. just to make sure everybody's okay, and just that calming influence that mm. was like, you know, that was really nice. So I know we're here for a discussion about teacher shortage, but mm-hmm. why did you want to get into education? We'll start, Dr. Martin, why did you want to get into education?
Well, both of my parents were educators, so it's in the blood. It's innate in me. And I always tutored. I used to tutor English as a second language in high school even. So I think it was just in my blood, so.
Yeah. Dr. Archer?
Rob, I did not want to go into education. I really fought it as much as I could. I actually went into chemistry, and I worked in the industry as an analytical scientist, and then I got really bored doing that, and I knew I loved chemistry, but I wanted to talk about it instead of doing it, and so that's what brought me into education. But it was my first field experience at Scott High School that made me realize I was where I was supposed to be. It was like the stars aligned and I felt purposeful. But prior to that, I would have never considered myself an educator.
We do have once a bulldog, always a bulldog. If you haven't heard that in Toledo, it's a saying. We have a couple of bulldogs in here in studio for sure.
Yep, alum and
I was baptized into being a bulldog.
She was.
I actually went to Rogers High School and I'm a Ram, but I got baptized into being a bulldog. So.
And I was the principal when she came over.
That's so interesting. So yes. What kind of a mean principal?
Dr. Jeffries-Martin, at that time, she was just Mrs. Jeffries. Yeah. She was the best principal.
Oh.
She really was. She taught
Thank
me a lot.
You.
I can recall several times I went to her office. I had a little breakdown, and she would just help me, check me, get me right into place, give me a dose of reality, and send me back to my classroom.
So let's talk about this. Teacher shortage, if you will. Fewer teachers entering the profession, high rates of teachers leaving or retiring early. You read some figures, you know, 400,000-ish around the country. It's kind of a big picture, you know, Dr. Martin, for you. When you look at this big picture, what do you think for yourself? Do you see as, you know, a couple of the key factors?
I think that burnout, teacher burnout is a big factor in that. I think that individuals, before they even think about going into the field, they have a misperception as far as the salaries, the work year, you know, what it entails, that the students today are going to be more difficult. And while comparatively some things may align with their thought process, I think that kids are kids. And if you set your expectations for students, that you can have a very good experience and you can have a very solid career as a teacher as well.
Yeah. Dr. Archer, a few thoughts on the why. Do you think, I mean, why fewer people are getting into this?
So a few things. First of all, there's not only a national teacher shortage, but there's a global teacher shortage. And you can see that there are programs in other countries, for example, the Explore program, where they take college students from the States and they bring them over there with not as many certifications to be teachers in other places. So we're seeing this problem not only here at home, but all over the world. One thing I think contributes to it, because this also isn't something new, this has been growing for some years now, in addition to what Dr. Martin said, but in the past, the field of education was disproportionately women, right? I think women may have felt like they were pigeonholed into nursing and education. But now we see with people having more options of different careers that they can go into, and education having maybe the pay scale or the type of ceilings that it does, people don't choose that profession. So people are going into many other, and there's more professions now than there were before. When you think about STEM alone, we used to just think about scientists and doctors, but now STEM is, the field is just so vast. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a million different things you can do. Probably even here at this studio, there are so many different professions here than there were in the past. So just with the variety and the increase of professions that are accessible to people, I think education is one that kind of got left behind.
You said earlier that you fought it. I mean, so back in the day, rewind back to before you got into education, what were some of your factors yourself for, I don't want to become a teacher because?
Mm-hmm. So Dr. Martin said that education was in her blood. Like, her parents were already in the field of education. For me, my father is an immigrant. So his idea, just like she talked about perception, was my kids need to be extremely educated and they need to go for the hardest careers out there. So growing up, he told me I was going to be a doctor. He told my brother he was going to be a lawyer. That was my father's perception of what some of the most successful professions were. So I never even considered education because it wasn't something that was poured into me. It wasn't something that was fed to me. It wasn't something that was even given as an option to me. And I didn't see that in my family. So I fought it and I chased a field in science because that is what was told to me would be the most successful route or path for me.
That was the definition of success, right? Was you follow that route. So Dr. Martin, as far as what she had said, I mean, do you see that maybe there's a cultural shift about the way we view the profession of being a teacher that has drastically changed over the years?
There's a couple of things. I did try to rebel at one point going into college. but if you look at like my yearbooks and it says that I was going to be a teacher or a pediatrician or something like that. But my father and mother always pushed me towards being an educator. But my major was actually the same as Dr. Archer's. I was you were chemistry, am I correct?
Yes.
Okay, I was biology and chemistry. And then I said, okay, well, I'm going to be a physical therapist. But along the lines, I was still a nanny. I was still a tutor. I was a big sister and big brother, big sisters. And so, again, it was still in my blood. And so I just couldn't avoid it because I went into HR the first year out of college. And then it was like, yeah, this isn't fulfilling for me. So then I went into my calling, my passion, what became my passion. So coming out of college, I really did not know which path I would end up taking because I wasn't listening to my father say, take those education courses. Even though very early in high school, I said, I wanted to be an educator, I veered off that path. And so I did not have an education license. But going into HR very early in my career, I realized I'm stepping away from my passion. So I got right back on track, went and got my master's degree in education. So the perception of the teaching field not paying as much or not being as successful was there back in the day. You know, I'm not going to date myself, but it was there. However, I think, as Dr. Archer said, we do have more options. And individuals, for example, women weren't pushed into STEM as much. And now, you know, I've seen a trend of anyone who is interested being pushed into various fields. So she's right in saying that we have more accessibility to different fields and different professions and awareness, too. So I think that schools have been pushing more on the career tech end and showing individuals that you have different pathways that you can take.
Reading some different national reports, most commonly reported shortage areas, special education, science, math. Is that what we're seeing here locally?
Correct. Yep. That you're absolutely right. So you have special education and then science and then math being those fields that have been and really historically the areas that we've had teacher shortages in.
Yeah, I have a friend locally who's a special education teacher, and he has that. I think you have to have a special skill set.
You do.
To go into special education. Mm-hmm. Do you find that, Dr.?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then let's just talk about math and science for a second. If someone excels in math and science, what do we naturally push them to do? Not necessarily become teachers, right? Yeah. When someone excels in math and science, we try to push them into careers that are more rigorous. That, and I'm not saying teaching is not rigorous because it's the hardest job I ever had in my life. But we find that students, as they're coming up through high school or elementary, and once they get into college, when they're really good in those fields, we don't tell them like, yes, now take that knowledge and go back into the classroom and teach that to someone else. We tell them like, yes, take that knowledge and apply to become an engineering school or apply to go to med school. So what type of value do we place on education as a society that we don't always value knowledge in certain areas should go back into the education system?
Yeah, the classroom setting of today, what makes it so stressful in your opinion, Dr. Martin?
I think that it's the outside influences that the students face on a daily basis. Our students bring so much baggage as well as the adults. So it's just a combination of possibly a generation gap there, but understanding what's happening in the community in which you teach is very important so that you can understand the trauma that some of our students face. And teachers are facing now, you know, versus 60 years ago, they're facing situations where they have to step out of their teaching role and really service the social emotional aspect of the students as well. So I think that that's one of the biggest challenges. I did want to talk about being a special education teacher and taking a special person. So right now, my husband is a special education teacher. And I remember when he went into a multi-disability classroom for the first year, and he absolutely loved it. He was very patient with the students, and he is very patient. But I think that the words that came out of his mouth were, I think I found my niche. Because he cares so much for the kids and want to make sure that they progress at their own level and they're successful in their own right. So,
okay. Dr. Archer, as far as the classroom setting of today, what are some of the factors that really, in your opinion, make it such a stressful environment?
So, and I'll tell you this quick little story, and it will really highlight what I'm thinking. So I was looking in the historian documents, you know, the place where they keep all those fun things over the years from TPS. And there I came across this really old picture, and it was in black and white. And there was a student sitting at a desk, and then behind the student was the teacher. And then there was the man who slept at the school, who like put the coal in the, you know, whatever they put the coal in to keep the school warm so that the students can come there. And then there was maybe someone who served the lunch. And there might have been one other person. I don't know. But the picture was supposed to depict the different support services or the different, I don't even know if at that time they were calling them support services, but the people who were there to keep the schoolhouse going so that a student can learn. If we were to recreate that picture today, there would be a student sitting at a desk. There would be a social worker, a counselor, a behavioral health partner, a nurse, a speech language pathologist, an occupational therapist, maybe a community hub person. There's so many different people that we have to have in our building, all these different supports to be able to meet the needs of our students. Because like Dr. Martin said, our students are coming in with so many more needs and our teachers are not always adequately prepared to meet the needs of our students. So when we think about the stress in the classroom or the stress in the school or just opportunities for support, we have to think about what the school is dealing with now as opposed to just teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Sometimes that feels cumbersome to people and they don't want to get into it.
And obviously the reports, you know, nationwide, you read them and, you know, school districts with higher populations of low-income students, students of color, more likely to experience understaffing. And any urban district across the country facing issues like that.
And Rob, think about this. In the past, we probably had plenty of people who maybe would have been diagnosed with autism or some other disability, but we weren't really diagnosing people. We were just calling them quirky or I don't know. We were maybe not meeting their needs the way we have laws in place now that we have to meet people's needs. And that opens an entire door of different supports that we should have in place legally to be able to help people in their differences.
Yeah. And there's a lot of terminology used within the educational system in terms of, trying to, diagnose what the challenges of a student is rather than just lumping everybody together. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that serves the student well, but sometimes if that creates like different specifications, which certain people aren't able to meet or address, I don't know if that's creating any type of tension within trying to hire people.
Well, and I think that anyone in education today can identify that as one of the variables that creates some stress. I know that when I was a principal, we were one of the first schools in the district that did the early warning system, or now we call it the early warning intervention management system. And that in itself was a stressor because you want to help every student. And participating in a root cause analysis for each and every student can be a difficult task. But we attempt to do it so that we can service all of the students. So, yes, that can be a stressor on anyone in education.
Obviously, the impact on students, if you have a reliance on long-term subs who maybe not are as qualified or equipped to be in the classroom as a certified teacher, obviously that is the stress that districts all over the country are facing right now. So at this particular point in time, we're going to take a break with Dr. Martin, Dr. Archer. Patty will be coming in on the flip side to talk about efforts by the district, by Toledo Public Schools, to address this very issue. You're listening to TPS Proud Out Loud.
And welcome back to TPS Proud Out Loud. I'm Patty Mazur, and we are here still with our good friends, Dr. Amira Archer and Dr. Treva Jeffries-Martin, a.k.a. to me as TJM. Treva and I have known each other many years and have progressed through the district together. And from the very first time I met you, you were a teacher at Scott. And from there, you just continued to move on, grow. And I believe when you took your current role, I said to you, welcome to the big boy table. So there you go.
I'm sure.
And you are still there and doing wonderful things. So we are here to talk more about what we are doing locally to address the teacher shortage. And when we spoke with Dr. Durant, he talked about, we focused on the transition of the district under his leadership and building a pipeline for industry here in Toledo, and that very much goes along with what we're seeing with the pre-med school, with Toledo Early College, the partnerships. We all know the teacher shortage. It's something that HR deals with every year. The next thing we know, we're going to open a teacher school, a teacher academy, more specifically the Brady Educator and Social Services Academy, which will be housed at Scott Park. And at this point, Dr. Archer has been helping to spearhead that initiative. What do you think? What do you want people to say to you when you go out? Why do you want to be a teacher? What makes a good teacher?
Ooh, what makes a good teacher? Definitely being a lifelong learner. You've probably seen, as long as you've been in education, 20 so years or however many decades you all have been here, education just keeps changing. And we have to shift and we have to pivot and we have to consider new issues and we have to adjust and meet people's needs. So part of what being a great educator is pivoting, whether that's year to year, period to period, or from the beginning of class to the end of the class, just being flexible enough to realize what's going on in your environment and pivot. I also would say you have to like kids. You gotta like kids if you're going to be an educator. This is not the right field for you if you do not like working with
young adults. What did Rita Pearson say? Rita Pearson say kids can learn from those they don't like.
Right.
That's and that's in so many cases in life, right? So
yeah.
That is, if someone comes up to you, Dr. Jeffries Martin, and says, I'm thinking of going into education. I want to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. What advice do you say to them? Do you have XYZ as your guiding light?
I may say why first, so that I can assess their mind frame, okay? If they are in a different field, I would say we have opportunities to become a substitute teacher so that you can get a taste of what the classroom entails and, you know, gauge from there whether this is a career that you'd still like to enter and see what they say from that point on.
And I think the district has embraced the onboarding process and that through your leadership in the department, there is a lot that goes into supporting the substitute teacher. So they're not just walking in and saying, here you go. You have resources and ideas and supports that you give those folks that think they want to try to be a sub.
Absolutely. One thing that took place when I entered the department was the assessment of how well our substitute teachers were doing in the classroom and if they were receiving the supports that they actually needed. So one of the first policies, if you want to call it that, that was a must was making sure that they went to our guest teacher training, which must take place before they enter a classroom. And so we would schedule their orientation, and the following week they would have to go to the guest teacher orientation or training so that they have lesson plans. They have classroom management resources that they can take with them as they travel throughout the district. Some individuals eventually become long-term substitutes, and then we have long-term substitute support as well, whether that be a teacher on special assignment or someone that goes in from our school consultation department to assist them if they need help. So we do try to provide the supports that are needed individually for those individuals.
And that just sets them up for success and ultimately the students for success.
Absolutely.
Dr. Archer, when you talk with a student, let's talk about first your aspiring young educator program.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that and what you've seen and how that has changed.
Sure. So Aspiring Young Educators is a club that is in our K-8 buildings. It's for students in grades 5-8 who might be interested in education or just want to test it out a little bit. At first glance, if you ask students, do you want to be a teacher? They don't always know, just like me. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know I wanted to be a teacher until I was in my 20s after I completed my first degree. So we always go tell students, if you have younger siblings that you like to teach things to, if you have people in your class that you like to help out, if you find yourself explaining concepts to your classmates you know, at school, you know, we just give them all these different ideas. If you like the way your barber explains things to you, if you really pay attention in church and you admire the way your pastor is preaching a sermon, redefining what an educator looks like to students and letting them know that an educator is not just this person at the front of the room, it's all these people in the community that are teaching you something, and getting them to think about teaching and learning differently, typically hook students into want to join AYE or Aspiring Young Educators. So when we initially started the club, it was started before I came into this role to assist with it, but there were a few schools. Now we've almost doubled the number of schools that have it. We have a conference every year where we bring all the clubs together district-wide, and they do professional development because teachers do professional development. So I think the main part of AYE is just getting students understanding that teaching and learning doesn't have to look the way they historically thought it looks.
Then how do you show them? You've given the example of you might be someone in your class who helps another student, or you like how your barber explains something to you. Mm-hmm. How do you say to them, all right, you have that knack. What is your next step? How do you follow that and find if that's your passion?
So part of Aspiring Young Educators, they have different activities that they do in their school. Sometimes it's going down to the kindergarten classroom and reading books to them. Sometimes it's helping line the kids up and take them out for dismissal. Sometimes it's creating bulletin boards in the school. Maybe you just are really crafty and you want to be an art teacher and you want to use that. Sometimes it's speaking on the announcements. So we provide the schools with a list of different things that students can do to assist in a teacher capacity, and just let the students try out these different things to see if education may be a route for them.
And that was one thing Dr. Durant talked about, to bring kids in earlier to start exploring a career path in 6th, 7th, 8th grade. If they find at that age that they like it, mm-hmm. something they want to do, great. Instead of getting to be freshman, junior, senior in college and realizing this might not be for me.
Right.
So I think we're definitely giving students that choice, that option to find things earlier.
Right. You can give them, you're giving them a head start.
Correct.
Giving them a head start in life and trying to make sure that if it isn't something they want to do, that they don't enter and spend a lot of money, mm-hmm. you know, in college. And they realize when, after they've invested so much time and effort, that this isn't really what I want to do, you know, and that's what, we try to make sure that we impress upon people who are saying as adults that they want to go into the field. And that's why we offer them, you know, we have some substitute teaching, you know, that you can do. So,
and it's so interesting that so much of what goes on in the district, we know about, we live it every day. We I think sometimes are so close to it, we don't realize the opportunities that we offer and the things that we have to give back to our kids and to our community.
Right.
And so that's why we are always the best cheerleaders for Toledo Public Schools.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You once said to me, the only way we are going to make the Brady Educator and Social Services Academy a success is if we do things differently.
Mm-hmm.
If we teach kids today differently than how we were taught,
mm-hmm.
to keep up with what's going on in the future. What does that look like for you? How are you going to ensure that happens?
So part of, and I know as a teacher, this is really uncomfortable because teachers like to have a plan. We overplan, and then we plan some more. Then we have a plan for the plan if the first plan didn't work. But part of teaching differently and doing things differently is having the students help us drive what that looks like. We as adults are always writing lesson plans. I mean, I used to write lesson plans I thought were the coolest thing. And I would get in the classroom and they would fall flat. And I would like be begging my kids to love it. Like, don't you guys love this? It took me forever to come up with this. And they were like, no, that was actually boring. Yeah, you should have did it like this. Yeah. Or, you know, then they would give me some feedback. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I'll revise and go back, whatever. But part of planning an academy to do teaching and learning differently, or to prepare teachers differently, to teach differently, is using the students that we have. Like, we'll have some students to come in who say, I want to give this a shot. I think I might want to be an educator. But then how can we leverage their thoughts and their ideas to be innovative moving forward? Instead of the adults always being the ones to make the decisions,
right.
We should allow the students' voices to drive the action and what teaching and learning looks like to come.
Right. And it allows our scholars to be able to say, you know, I needed this when I was in school, so let me take this opportunity to become a teacher so that I can provide that for the next generation, too. So
that's what changed for me. Exactly. I love that.
And that's not to say that we don't have a plan or a framework for what education should look like. That just means that the nuances of it all should still be driven by student voice.
Right. And we have seen what student voice can do in our district.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
And we're going to have some students in coming up to talk about things from the student perspective and the barriers to education and how they've helped us overcome that. But let's talk about the education part of this. How, if a student hears us or a parent hears us today, how do they find out more about the Brady Educator Academy?
Yes, the Brady Educator and Social Services Academy is going to open August 2026. You can go to our website. It's BESSA.TPS.org, and you can find more information out there. We are accepting applications now for grades 7, 8, and 9. The school will ultimately be a 7 to 12th high school, Magnet High School, but with our first year, we're only starting with grades 7, 8, and 9 for 2006.
Nice. And Dr. Martin, would you like to tell your story of this? This is so good.
So I have a 7-year-old. He's in second grade. Ever since he was in preschool, he has said that he wanted to be a police officer. And so this is an opportunity for him when he reaches seventh grade. Remember, he's in second right now. So when he reaches seventh grade, this is an opportunity for him to go into a school that will focus directly on his desire, his passion. And since he's been consistent, I introduced it to him, and he was extremely excited about the opportunity that's coming in the future.
Aww. I guess we should add that the social services part of the Brady Academy is students who are interested in fields in public safety. So if students want to be police officers, firefighters, a detective, or even go into pre-law, right. The Brady Educator and Social Services Academy will have a pathway for those students as well.
And that again just shows how the foundation of a community, and I think of Toledo, falls upon Toledo Public Schools. Mm-hmm. And we celebrated our 175-year anniversary last year. If you stop and think about the leaders of industry that were born here in Toledo and were educated by Toledo Public Schools and went to your alma mater, Scott mm-hmm. High School, it's pretty impressive. And so I mm-hmm. think with what we're doing at Scott Park, the innovation there, the focus on community and building and economic development mm-hmm. that we're seeing through Toledo Public Schools is something that shows will be around another 175 right. years.
Well, you have two alumni here.
Yes. And Roger. Yeah, let's not forget about the Rams.
Let's not forget right. Rogers.
Right. So, Dr. Jeffries, your last comment. Why would someone want to be a teacher today?
All I can do is tell you from my perspective that it is the most rewarding career, especially when you see them as adults. And they come up to you and they say, you made a difference in my life. Because we have the opportunity to mold young minds. And when you do that in a way that exudes compassion and integrity, again, it's just a gift that you can give yourself and students that can't even be expressed.
What do your parents say when you go back and say, oh, I ran into one of my students today?
My mother is usually with me. I'm serious. I'm trying to think where I was this weekend. I was in a store, and before I walked out of the store, there were about five of my former students that I ran into and their children. And they always tell their children, this was mommy's teacher. This was mommy's, you know, principal, or this is daddy. I had her and she was tough on me, or, you know, you really changed my life. And they say that in front of their own children. And it is just a very rewarding feeling. You may not get it right away, but years later, when it comes back to you, you get to think about the lives that you've touched.
That's your TPS proud moment.
That is. Yes. That is. Yes. And it's so funny because I always say I can tell what era in my career the students you know, graced my presence, because they'll say Miss Jeffries or Miss Jeffries Martin or Dr. Jeffries Martin. So it depends on if I hear whatever I'm hearing. But sometimes when they say Miss Jeffries, it's not me. It's my mother. Because remember, my mother was a teacher as well. And they would have had her 50 years ago when she had me in her belly at Pickett. So
and they
I have to look back.
Her.
Oh, absolutely.
And that is so touching.
People stop
that.
Me all the time and ask about my parents. I had your mother at Pickett. I had your mother at DeVoe. I had your father at Scott. So
that's,
yeah.
One last comment from you, Dr. Archer. Mm-hmm. Why would someone want to be a teacher and go through the Brady Educator Academy?
Teaching is the one profession that creates every profession, right?
Yes.
You have to have a teacher if you're going to do anything in life. So it's that vital. But teaching is a legacy profession. Just like Dr. Jeffries Martin was saying, you're constantly planting seeds. You're connected to your community. I'm sure I can find another job where I work until I retire, but how else do you have so many legs within the community other than teaching? I remember I told you all that I wanted to go into med school, and I remember the day I told my father that I'm going to go back to school and get a degree in education. I was so scared because he told me I was going to be a doctor my entire life. And I went to go tell him, like, Dad, I'm going to go get my master's in education and I'm going to be a teacher. And he was so proud of me. He was actually more proud than if, you know, how he was when I was trying to pursue becoming a pediatrician. And he was like, this is a long lasting career. This is a legacy. You get to pour into minds. You're going to plant seeds. Like, all of this enthusiasm came out of him. And first I was thinking, hold on, if you were going to be this happy, how come I wish I could have done this? You know, I didn't know I was going to get this reaction. But if I always tell students, if I would have went through the Brady Educator Academy when I was in high school, I would have known right out of high school that I should be a teacher. Likewise, if I would have went through a school like Toledo Pre-Med, I would have known right out of high school that I have no business being in healthcare. That wasn't the field for me. So this is an opportunity for students to see if their plans for the rest of their life align with what they're interested in. Or if, you know, they come to the Brady Educator Academy, they could have a great high school experience and decide afterward, maybe this is not the career for them, but it would not have costed any time or money in college. Mm-hmm. So
it's our chance to say Toledo Public Schools is the place for choice. And we welcome students to learn more about TPS and about the Educator Academy at tps.org. And that wraps up this segment. We'll be right back. Hello, and welcome back to TPS Proud Out Loud. I'm Patty Mazur, and I am very proud to introduce our next guest, Dr. Tom Brady, the founder and chairman of Plastic Technologies. He holds 6 U.S. patents, received the Lifetime Achievement Award from the plastics industry in 2010, and has received numerous other honors, including being named Entrepreneur of the Year in 1989 and Philanthropist of the Year with his wonderful wife, Betsy, in 2006. Dr. Brady holds a bachelor's and master's from Dartmouth, and his PhD from the University of Michigan. He served as the interim dean of the Judith Erb College of Education from 2009 to 2011. He was appointed to the Board of Trustees of the former Medical College of Ohio, and after the merger continued to serve on the UT Board of Trustees until his appointment as dean. His charitable and community service work includes serving as a board member with the And I don't know if this is current or if this is past, but Regional Growth Partnership, the Port Authority, Toledo Symphony, University of Toledo, the Governor's Third Frontier Commission, Toledo Early College, and Toledo Technology of Academy of Engineering. A native of Maumee, Dr. Brady has strong ties to the area with a special interest in public service and education. And I am very proud to have you here today. Welcome.
Well, it's nice to be here, and I'm glad to help out, particularly when it's about education.
Yes. I did some research and found out more about you than I had previously known, which was very interesting to me. Do you consider yourself a lifelong learner?
Well, certainly. And frankly, it's not just about technology and engineering. It really is about life itself. And part of that learning, and I say this frequently, if you had to pick the one thing that we as a society could do to solve the problems on the back end of the life equation, we would pick education on the front end. So I have been involved in education for a number of years and have done what I can do to try to promote it.
And you've certainly done a lot. Where does that commitment come from? Was that early on in your life? Was there a teacher back in school that prompted you to have that yearning to keep learning and to keep doing and set you on that path?
Well, I suppose it goes back to your original question. I was always in an environment where education was emphasized, and those kids that are in a different kind of environment don't get it. I'll give you just a quick sketch. Actually, my grandfather, Jesse Ward, founded the College of Secondary Education at the University of Toledo back in 1927. And when I was a kid, I used to come to his office. And he gave me books to read, but not my books, his books. My mom and both aunts both graduated from UT as teachers, taught in the Maumee and other school systems for many years. Both of my sisters were teachers. One of my grandmothers was a teacher. So I really didn't have any choice but to be in that environment. But it wasn't about them telling me about education. It was about me living the idea that education was important.
And I would say through your career, that spark kept with you. And it took you down the path of engineering and kept you sharp in the idea of manufacturing and trying new things, which is what we're talking about today when it comes to the idea of teachers and getting students of today interested in becoming educators. Is that something that you feel through your work you can make that commitment to a student and say, this is the importance of education and this is why?
I think I can, and I guess maybe to again sort of tell a story, I was a very non-traditional dean of education. I mean, my PhD is in engineering, and while I have respected and been involved in education, I am not an educator. But Dr. Jacobs, back in 2009, came to me and said, you know, we need somebody in education who didn't come from education. Would you be interested? My dad said, don't do it. My wife said, don't do it. Everybody said, don't do it. But I did it anyway. But Dr. Jacobs, I think his point was not just in education, although this is where he was coming from, that the crossover of disciplines in life gives all of us a chance to understand, in my case, how you use engineering instead of doing engineering. And also, in the case of education, why education is important, not just that you have to go learn physics, chemistry, and English. So I think it all fits together.
And I think it so much is a life lesson, right? As you said, you didn't come from the field of education, but you had a vast background in a career, very successful career, and in life. So I think we can all act as educators when it comes to public education, our connection to Toledo Public Schools, and in working with the future of our students and the next generation of educators. So what is I've often heard you say you're committed to Dr. Durant, you believe in his vision for the district and transforming the district. Talk to us a little bit about that.
I guess I would point to the, 37 career tech programs and 7 magnet schools, and those are nice words, but what they really are about is saying that everybody, particularly in an urban environment, doesn't need to go learn math, English, and physics and nothing else. And so it's about not just learning other things, but being exposed to other things. And frankly, that's the whole idea of the co-op program at the University of Toledo. You know, these kids, while they're learning engineering, get to go out and learn what's happening so that when they graduate, they know what to do. Really, the same thing is true in education. And I will, again, point specifically to my experience at the College of Education. where, again, my observation, even after just a couple of years, was a lot of kids would come to college and say, I don't know what I want to do. I guess I'll become a teacher, right? Mm-hmm. So they start out, they get to be juniors, and they think, I'm not so sure. But, oh, by the way, I've got to finish. Mm-hmm. So they do, go out and get a job. Year or two later, they leave the teaching profession. And so back to Dr. Durant, his brainchild, really, in that regard was, which is not so hard to understand, why don't we expose these kids to the teaching profession in the seventh and eighth grade?
Right.
And then when they get to high school and college, they'll have a better idea of do they or do they not want to do it. So that's what the whole idea of the Brady Educator Academy is. It's about exposing these kids early. And yes, they take math and English and physics, but they also get exposed to the teaching profession. So those that don't want to do it, learn it before they're juniors in college.
Right, and walk away with astronomical debt, and they go out into a career that they find, as you said, 2 or 3 years later, it's something that they're not really passionate about. And I think one thing that Dr. Jeffries and Dr. Archer talked about in our previous segments were the importance of passion and showing that in what you do every day in the classroom, because the students know if you are passionate about what you're talking about. So Dr. Durant is very passionate about setting the path for students early on. What do you see as how the Brady Educator Academy is going to help with the students of tomorrow becoming our teachers of tomorrow?
Well, as I said, I think the short answer is we're going to send kids to the colleges of education that have a better understanding and have actually practiced in many ways the art of teaching. And so they will, as they enter college, be much more passionate, as you said, about it. And, oh, by the way, when they graduate, will become teachers. And the teaching profession, as Dr. Durant will say, is not an easy profession. And, oh, by the way, the pay's not all that great. So you really need people there that are committed to the profession and committed to the kids more, even more than the profession. And so we hope that the Brady Educator Academy will be actually a model. And while it might be nice for the Toledo Public Schools and UT, what we hope is that that kind of a model, like the other magnet schools, will become models that others will use throughout the country if it works.
Absolutely. And we have seen that interest come from not just Northwest Ohio, but across the region and across the country we've seen interest. Talk to us about the Brady Partnership School through the University of Toledo. This is interesting.
Well, that's another interesting one, and it really got started when I served as dean. And the as I got to know the early childhood teachers, one of the things, and remember, this is where you're training teachers. One of the things they told me was, you know, a lot of these kids get out and get a job. They've lived in Sylvania or Maumee or something. They get out and get a job in Woodward or Scott, and all of a sudden they say, oh, my gosh, this isn't what I bargained for. And again, it's an excuse to leave, right? They can't do it. So the Brady Partnership Schools is, and I give Dr. Slutsky and Dr. Delaney huge credit for thinking of this. They said, how about if we begin in college to expose these kids to what they're going to be exposed to? So the partnership schools is UT, TPS, and the Boys and Girls Club.
Awesome.
And what that means is that kids that come to be teachers, urban teachers, are going to be involved in that urban environment as well as in the UT College of Education. And the whole idea is, just like the partner, the academy, is to give these kids the exposure that they need so that they have a clear understanding when they do make the commitment.
Teaching in an urban school district is it's something that people have to be ready for. Our students come in with a variety and various home lives and situations that not every district in Northwest Ohio will see and understand. So I think that's great that we are giving students an eye for eye and a one-on-one chance to get into a classroom situation to see how it is to be in an urban school district, because that's where you're really going to make a difference. Urban education, think of the people who have gone through Toledo Public Schools over 175 years and the impact they've made on Northwest Ohio. It's incredible to me, the founders of our area all coming through Toledo Public Schools.
Well, interestingly, my mom went to Scott High School.
Oh, okay.
Now, back, and she mm-hmm. went from, she actually traveled to Scott from Maumee because Scott was the place to go back then,
okay.
Right? Now, it was still an urban school and maybe not as diverse as it is today, but she was the one that kind of promoted me as I went through this process myself. So she had a good understanding.
So she knew that. That's so great. And so you had the influence of education from when you were younger. What do you tell your children now, your grandchildren? You were talking about going to visit your grandson recently. Are you thinking you should be in education, or I want you to go along this route in life and teach them what?
Well, that's an interesting question. And I think my challenge, or not challenge, but my goal with my, and I have 12 grandkids, by the way.
Okay.
Ages 7 to 25.
Okay.
And by the way, the oldest is back in town as a registered chiropractor. I painted her furniture, and my wife is her patient. So she's not in the teaching profession.
Keeping it in the family.
But what I was going to say was, those grandkids, from almost day one, as we've gotten to know them, our goal is to help them think creatively. For example, one of the things that I do, which doesn't have anything to do with education per se, is I've got a massive woodworking and hobby shop. And every one of those kids has spent hours and hours and hours in that. And what I'm trying to do is to teach them to think, to be creative. You can read a book and say, oh, I want to be creative by reading a book. But my goal is to get those kids to think, to do, to be able to solve problems that they haven't solved before. And it won't mean that they'll all become teachers. But I bet you whether they become a teacher or an engineer or anything else, my grandkids are going to go into those professions thinking creatively. So, and frankly, I think that's one of the things that I'm promoting at the engineering school, is to take art as a fundamental course, just like you take, math as a fundamental course, because how we think, and again, you know, a lot of us like to live in silos, and we need in the education world to get people out of those silos.
That's so great. I love that. We have just a couple of minutes left. Think about the one bit of advice. You are going to the first graduation at the Brady Educator and Social Services Academy graduation. You are speaking. What do you say to those students, those graduates, the first four-year graduates?
I'm glad you asked me that, because I need to think about it.
It'll be here before you know it.
But I think what I would say was, you had an experience that almost nobody else in the country at this point has had. So what I'd like you to do is not necessarily go out and be a teacher, but I'd like you to reflect on that experience so that if and when you go out to become a teacher, you go out with a commitment and passion and dedication to make it successful. Because I'm worried about those kids you teach, and I want to make sure that you, having graduated from here, if that's what you do, that that's how you go into it.
Again, lifelong learning lessons from Tom Brady. Dr. Brady, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you and Dr. Durand and TPS for doing what you do and have done for many years for the kids of Toledo.
That's a wrap for this week's episode. I'm Patty Mazur.
And I'm Rob Worsinski. Thanks for listening.
We want to thank our guests, Dr. Treva Jeffries-Martin, Dr. Amira Archer, and Dr. Tom Brady.
Join us next time on TPS Proud Out Loud.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.